Our third panelist is Stylianos Pyrakis, the RBC Distinguished Professor of Financial Derivatives at Concordia University. His presentation is titled, It's the Governance, Stupid, Structural Reforms in Microeconomic Policy in the Greek Crisis.
Economic crisis, ecology, θα διαλέξω εγώ, ας το πω εγώ, Montreal, πώς πάει κάτω. Montreal presentation, new, αυτό. Ας το βάλω αυτό. Εντάξει. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, good evening, and first of all, I would like to point out, you know, this presentation has nothing to do with financial derivatives, you know, but I do have, as you can see from just looking at me, I have a long career, indecently long, and the first half was actually very much related to the topic of my presentation, which, as you see, it's structural reforms and microeconomic policy in the Greek crisis. Well, reflections of an indignado. Why an indignado? What is an indignado? An aganaktismenos, an angry man. How do you change? Okay, this one. Well, what is the aganaktismenos? It's a Spanish term. I don't know how well you describe it in English, but it was a term, aganaktismenos, attached to the crowds of rioters who destroyed the Athens downtown on repeated occasions, one of which, alas, I witnessed. And what they did, considering the fact that they were going to pay for it in terms of reduced funds for pensions or increases or in salaries or whatever, is the ultimate in irrationality. Well, logic may be a Greek word, but it's not necessarily a Greek practice. Okay? So these indignados insulted and cursed their elected politicians as responsible for the crisis and its consequences, and they accompanied the curses with the well-known Greek gesture, which is known as mouza or faskelo. You know, the Greeks recognize the term with the five extended thing. Well, I share their anger, except I believe that a lot of these moudzas should have been directed in front of the mirror, okay? Because the fact is that the Greeks were, to a large extent, the architects of their own problems, as we shall see from this presentation. First of all, I'm very happy that I come after Yanis and Thanasis. I have to, make exactly the same points as they do, only I'll make it with terms much more vivid in picking out various vignettes that show why Greece has problems in tracing various reforms and the role of elites, not only the government. Governance is not only the government, it's organized groups which are important institutions within a democratic society, like, for instance, the professional associations. These groups have failed miserably, and I think you should share, if you love Greece, you should share my anger towards them. And I would like to call you, since I am the only Greek-Canadian of the panelists, to compare how Canada would have behaved in similar circumstances. I realize it's a very high standard, okay? It's one, the country in which I'm now a citizen differs from the country of my birth as quality of governance, as you know, heaven from hell. I mean, but the point is that it is not impossible to reach if there is some kind of will. So far, this will has not come, and it has to come from conscious effort from all of us. So let's take a look at the things that, as I said, I've been following very closely the Greek events in conjunction, of course, with my long experience as an economist, both academic and also practitioner. And, you know, it's very hazardous to your health, especially if you suffer from blood pressure. You know, but, you know, and so the only way you can face it is with a sense of humor. Okay? So let's try and contain any rough statements that I am inclined to make. So let's see two recent news items, very recent, which I picked up when I was preparing this presentation. Exhibit 1, pharmacies and non-prescription drugs. It's a news item, not opinion pieces, from both of them, from Kathimerini, which is the best Greek newspaper, and certainly objective, March 3, 2013. Exhibit 2, shopping hours and price discounts in Greece. And I give you also the names of the newspaper man and the newspaper woman. So what did they say? Well, the first one, the troika of experts that represents Greece's lenders, which everybody talked about, is pressing the leadership of the Greek Ministry of Health for the liberalization of the market for non-prescription drugs now sold only in pharmacies. Now, this competitive measure, everybody agrees, will reduce consumer prices for these products, which are currently subject to the high profit margins of the pharmacies, which are regulated. Now, the ministry objects, arguing that the measure will be a serious blow to the viability of the 11,000 Greek pharmacies. Presumably, not changing it is not going to be a heavy blow to people who suffered all these cuts in pensions and in salaries. So the troika cares more about the 11,000 pharmacies, about the 10 million Greek consumers, than the Greek Minister of Health. Well, my opinion of the Greek Minister of Health is not to be repeated in front of a polite audience. Let's see the second part, which is even worse, because the Greek Minister of Health, well, let's not say anything about him. The second one is worse. The Troika is pressing the Greek Ministry of Economic Development to allow shops to offer price discounts during the entire year and also to allow superstores to stay open 10 Sundays a year. The smaller shops can open, can stay open as much as they want. The minister wants the discount periods to increase only to 4 per year from the current 2, and the superstores to stay open only 7 Sundays a year, the smaller stores more often. Now, the minister is caught between the Troika and the Chamber of Commerce, supported by several MPs, alas, who object to even the partial liberalization that he is proposing. Now, I ask you, the Greeks complain, as Thanasis pointed out, about the prices being sticky downwards, and while incomes are reduced, the prices stay sticky. How the hell are the prices going to go down if the shopkeepers are not allowed to give price discounts except twice a year? That's a question, of course, that why, and more to the point, why do the Greeks who complain that the cost of living stayed high in spite of the recession stay silent and do not support the Troika's request? Even worse, you know, you'll say, after all, this is a coalition government. What about the opposition? Well, the statements of the opposition on various subjects proves the dictum: no matter how incompetent and bad a Greek politician is, there's always a worse one waiting behind the scenes to inflict his presence on the population. Because they are opposing even the mild, if you like, reforms that were actually carried out. So there's further comments to illustrate that these, as I said, these are not glamorous issues. You know, I don't have any high economics to tell you about, not because these are milk and motherhood issues among economists. That's why I say it raises the blood pressure. But the fact is that in Greece, even these elementary issues are treated with a cavalier way. Now, one example of one liberalization: until November 2012, pharmacies had the exclusive right to sell powdered milk, I mean, for for babies. In Canada, it's a, you know, you go to your local grocery store, you can buy it at least, and you could buy it even when I was raising my babies, you know, which was quite a while ago, I hate to admit. Now, that's first comment. The first one, have you heard of any other place in North America or anywhere else that restricts price discounts to twice a year, or that won't make it four? Now, the third comment is the extended hours and Sunday shopping debate, you know, has a very retro feel for a Greek Canadian. This is a debate that was settled in Canada about 40 years ago. When I first came to Canada in 1970, shopkeepers were again doing the same imbecility. They were asking me to sign petitions not to have extending hours. I told them, well, I'm not telling you what I told them, but anyhow, the hours are extended and Sunday shopping was introduced. I would like to point out that voluntary extension of shopping hours, which is all that's requested by the Troika, will almost certainly increase employment. And when you have 26.4% unemployment rate, that should be a number one priority. Number one priority of a government. Because a supermarket that's allowed to be open on Sunday will be forced to hire more clerks, more truck drivers to bring to the supply chain, more of everything. So it's going to increase employment, and that's it's a criminal, I think, to even discuss and clutter the agenda with the Troika, with this trivia, which they were not. The Troika left in March without settling these issues. It's back now. I don't know what's going on. To be honest with you, it's a full-time work just to follow the evolution of these issues. Now, these two recent examples are typical of the Greek political system's reaction to structural reforms, government and opposition. They protect elites. The pharmacists are an elite, a super elite, as a matter of fact. And the Chamber of Commerce, of course, does not exactly represent poor people. And they protect them at the expense of weaker segments of the population. That's what you have a left opposition normally, but the left opposition, well, non parlons pas, as they say in French. Okay? So the Troika, of course, are not philhellenes, not at all. I mean, they react like competent professionals doing their job. They have the same attitude towards these issues that I do and all my colleagues have. I mean, these are elementary policies that should be adopted, period, paragraph. So what are the structural reforms? I think we talked about what they are. First of all, the first part that Thanasis talked about is the reforms, the mechanism of the state, legal and justice systems, public administration. I fully agree with Thanasis. It is the most important, probably, and they will not. I won't talk about them because I don't have, although they are very important as factors for investment, but I don't have to add anything to them. They already were discussed. And, of course, without these reforms, there's not going to be any foreign investment. The Greeks cannot expect foreign investment if the investor comes and the legal system cannot protect them against various crooks or various lawbreakers who prevent it from taking place, even if they have received permission. The structural reforms I'm going to talk about are the organization of the economy, as we defined it, the laws and regulations of firms and institutions, state interventions in economic activity, self-regulating bodies and associations, and the public enterprises. Let me point a little bit of a parenthesis on economic theory. Since the late 1960s, there was the so-called North American economy, and to a lesser extent, Europe. It followed with certain delay. The deregulation revolution underwent the so-called deregulation revolution, which adopted as one principle which has remained constant and no one is disputing, as I said, is milk and motherhood. The competitive standard is the most fair and efficient model of economic organization. That's a conclusion backed by theoretical studies in which both Yanis, I believe, and myself have done our share. Now, and second, one thing that comes out of it is the public ownership is unsuitable for competitive markets. This is an obvious thing because it requires quick reactions. It requires also cost cutting immediate and various other adjustments which the government firm cannot do. Now, think about it. Canada was not always the way it is today. So it embraced this revolution relatively slowly, but it embraced it 30 years ago. That's quite a while. And so public, they remember what happened. The first and biggest one is the abolition of the IATA cartel in the airlines. Until when I first came to Canada, and also when I first came to North America in 1964, airline travel was a service available only to the very rich. It was extremely expensive. I remember at the time when I was going to come, it was equivalent, a round trip to the United States, it was equivalent to the monthly salary of the top paid professional, which I was then. I was a mechanical engineer. And so it was 2 months it took, just one trip, one person. And so you didn't do it. I came by ship. I mean, the Queen Frederica, I still remember, which was a little bit more reasonable. That the abolishing the cartel made air travel available to the common man. I think I don't need to tell you how important it was for Greece with its tourism sector. It was immense in terms of globalization, in terms of bringing, if you like, wealthy people, not wealthy people, also the common man to Greece and integrating Greece culturally into the European environment. Unfortunately, it didn't integrate it enough. The second one is in Canada, I didn't realize it. It took some time. Air Canada, which was privatized, it wasn't privatized immediately. It was privatized, I think, in the late 1980s. I don't remember. And I remember fighting with somebody. I told him that it will be privatized. And he said, no, it will never. Nonsense. It was obvious it was going to come. Other privatizations, Canadian National, Petro-Canada, several other firms, again, public firms were also privatized. Another thing that happened, elimination of entry restrictions in trucking, in merchandise transportation, which also existed in Canada, alas, for reasons that I don't know. But they were abolished about 30 years ago. Last but not least, there was the telecommunications sector. When I first came to Canada, it was one huge integrated firm, Bell Canada, which sold you not only telephone services, but also the telephone equipment that you used to the rotor that they had at that time. So now, as you know, it's competitive everywhere, just about. The only monopoly that it maintains is on the network, the ownership of the network. So this is a problem. It's known as the frontier of the natural monopoly. Where does the natural monopoly stop? So, which, again, it stops basically at the big infrastructure necessary to provide the services. So what did Greece, the efficiency applications, all these are supply-side policies, which Thanasis described very nicely. They reduce the cost of production and increase productivity. By the way, all this was prepared. We didn't talk with each other. They came completely independently. As you can see, we have more or less have the same points to make, only in different ways. So they bring benefits spread out to the entire society, but cost money to small groups of people who enjoyed market power before these policies. For instance, businessmen and professionals would rather not have competition in their markets. Workers would rather be employed by public firms. And workers would rather be employed in monopolies because they have the leeway to increase their wages, even though it's not accompanied by increasing productivity. For this reason, these supply-side policies arouse fierce opposition from the affected groups and gather little support from the public that doesn't understand them very well. That's the big problem in Greece. They can be implemented only by good governments. What's a good government? Able to say no when to a group that's protesting, when by knows that what is doing is right for the general public. Period, paragraph. And also, there has to be explained to the people by honest public media that can mobilize public opinion. Both, alas, are missing in Greece, and the public media are missing even more, perhaps, than a good government. So let's go further. Let's see what the Greeks did while the regulation revolution were taking place. Well, they were going the other way. Okay? And when you go the other way to the prevailing economic ideas, there's one thing. Either you're a genius who's deserving of a Nobel, or you're an idiot who is going to ruin his country. Well, you can guess what happened. Olympic Airlines, for instance, was acquired by the state in 1975. It took 34 years to reprivatize it. When it was reprivatized, it was costing net cash flow to the Greek state of 1 million euros a day. Okay, so you can see the cost of this. Well, that's only one of these imbecilities. The second one, trucking, became a closed shop between 1977 and 1986. Unfortunately, these bad decisions started under the greatest Greek statesman that Greece produced, after perhaps Venizelos, Konstantin Karamanlis, and even more, unfortunately, by a person when the national economy was run by a person who had particular respect, a decorated World War II hero, Panayotis Papaliguras, who otherwise did many, many good things. Yet here they could not follow the flow, possibly because the French didn't follow. Karamanlis was very much tied up to the French way of doing things, and the French delayed. They also delayed for a long time. Now, of course, when Andreas Papandreou came, there was, you know, the sky was the limit. Extensive state ownership was established in the 1980s in unbelievably many sectors. Desalinization plants, Ellinikes Alikes. What kind, by what reasonable criteria would the production of salt be a public firm? Shipbuilding and repairs, banking, nickel mining, cement. Some of these were later reprivatized, but others are still publicly owned. The only exception that is an exception to the rule is telecommunications, which became privatized. And also the natural monopoly frontier was extended in electricity, and there were entry restrictions and anti-competitive practices established by law in several professional bodies. So that was what the Greeks did while the others were deregulating. So you heard the consequences. I'm not going to dwell on them. There's the Greek labor market. We don't have time, unfortunately, to go over it in detail, but if you want to ask questions after that, I'll be happy to discuss it. Now, in the two memoranda that Greece signed with its lenders, it had agreed to extensive structural reforms, the Troy would point out, including privatization, shrinking of the public sector, opening up of the professional guilds, and liberalization of the labor market. These were strongly endorsed by the public intervention of 18 prominent Greek economists in June 2011, of the mostly diaspora. Three of them are sitting in this panel, and it included also Greece's, no, the Greek, ethnically Greek, only ethnically Greek Nobel laureate, Christos Pissarides. Well, where do we stand today, 3 years into the crisis? The record is mixed at best, and large parts of the program have not even started. Others took years for their implementation. Successes and failures, some anti-competitive practices were eliminated. Entry restrictions were not lifted for pharmacies and notary publics, for instance, the profession. For what kind of reason is the pharmacy profession a closed shop? I have no idea, and I don't think anybody else knows either. Okay? The trucking sector was opened up after an almost three-year fight. 3 years it took for this simple reform, which was very simple, but the fight turned the times violent, and there was an almost back and forth between Troika and the then Minister of Infrastructure, in charge of infrastructure, somebody who was by training a dentist. I don't know why, but anyhow, it's the right man in the right place, perhaps, because he was inflicting pain, but he didn't do the job very well, although in the end, he did what needed to be done. So a partial liberalization also took place in the taxi industry, again, after violence. Some shrinking of the public sector has taken place, but the privatization part of the program has not even begun. I think the one in Costco that Yanis mentioned, I think had been already begun before the memoranda, if I'm not mistaken. The most encouraging thing, there has been some progress in law enforcement and the avoidance of violent disruptions. In this respect, the handling by the current Minister of Public Order of the strike, of the farmer strike, was done impeccably. You know, they demonstrated, for reasons that I'm embarrassed even to mention, you'd say, are the Greek farmers so imbecile? But at any rate, they demonstrated, they let them demonstrate whatever they wanted, but they didn't allow them to blockade the major highways, okay? Which, if you want to people to demonstrate, you don't need to destroy the country in order to make your point, which is that's what you got. So that was a very encouraging if they do the same thing in other instances. So there's a case study of tracking, which is one of the most important, but we don't have to do this. And I'll end up with the two examples, probably the most infuriating of all, the role of the elites. So the doctors had to they were forced to do certain things that they didn't want to do. First of all, they had to electronically register their visits and their prescriptions, but now they are required to prescribe generic rather than patented drugs were available. It's an issue that I know very well how it goes in Canada, alas, alas, since I am consumer, heavy consumer of some of these drugs to stay alive, and they, all of them, turn generic as soon as the patent protection goes. No one thinks twice about it. Now, the Athens Medical Association is going to court to stop this practice, which is standard in Canada. The why I know, I don't want to say it, because it's because the Big Pharma, as is well known for paying kickbacks to doctors, and they want to simply maintain this nice, lucrative, off-the-record source of income. But they don't say this. They couch it under various imbecilities. They think it's better and all this. As a Canadian, I tell them, well, I don't want to repeat what I want to tell them. So. Now, that's what they do, the doctors. What they don't do is even more important, because they've caught many doctors who have been accused of failing the law for asking bribes from patients to offer treatment. I haven't heard of a single case of a doctor facing a disciplinary hearing by the Medical Association for this practice in Athens. In Canada, as I checked with somebody active in the Ontario Medical Association, if anyone had asked this for a patient, he would have been the last patient he would have ever consulted in his life, professional life. He had lost his license, and that's how it should be, period. Now, that's the doctors. The next one is the lawyers. It's hard to say good things about the lawyers, but at any rate, before the crisis, they had adopted very imaginative restrictions and make work rules. Some of them, Thanasis point them out. In civil law cases, lawyers could practice only the area tribunal to which they were accredited. So if you had a piece of land in an island which you want to build a hotel or a tourist development, and of course you would raise the money in Athens, you had to have two lawyers, one in the island and one in Athens, okay, the double accounting. And also lawyers could not advertise extra qualifications. I have a nephew who has both a law and finance degree, and all important nowadays, especially the way the cases become more and more complex when you go over financial issues, which are very common litigation problem. Well, he cannot put it in his sign. He is a lawyer and also finance expert. No, it's they want to everyone to be reduced to the same common denominator. Yeah, I don't need to point out how stifling of innovation and self-improvement these kind of practices are. And also, a lawyer has to be involved in many types of transactions, whether the two transaction parties want it or not, such as divorces and house purchases or transfers, which here I know very well in Quebec. I bought a condo, so all you need is a notary public. You don't need a lawyer. And in Greece, you have to have a lawyer and a notary public, of Now, what the Law Society went on strike and to court to stop all attempts at liberalization of these rules. What they didn't do is discipline or investigate lawyers for this appalling situation of justice, this justice system as it is. A lot of it is caused by obstructions by lawyers hoping for this to let a client go free because they run out of time. It's a notorious case of the MP Zoe Constantinopoulou, the Syriza MP, who has been, if you check the internet, it makes you ashamed for being a compatriot of that person, because she is defending a serial rapist, and she has managed to keep him out, not of prison, out of trial for since 2005. That's 8 years, 7.5 years. If you have a girlfriend or a sister who is traveling to Greece as a tourist, you know, how would you feel about the way the Greece is treating these people? So that's one. Maybe what she does is acceptable in Greece, okay, given the status of the... But certainly in Canada, she would have been investigated for obstruction of justice. If you deliberately delay the trial, that's what it was. So let's conclude the consequences of the reforms, delays and failures. First of all, the simple reform of the transport sector will have increased GNP by more than 1% per year. So the cost of the 3-year delay is in the hundreds of millions. I pointed out the anti-competitive practices, the delays in privatization and all this, Thanasis talked about it, and the initial failure of law enforcement to stop violent protests is a serious deterrent to foreign investment. And last but not least, I don't want to talk about it at length unless you ask questions, the tolerance of the underground economy of illegal immigration are major contributors to the high unemployment. So conclusions, the examples that we saw may have been governance failures, but the reflected systemic flaws of Greek society, alas, in its political expectations, its lack of solidarity towards the weaker, economically weaker members, and of course the moral bankruptcy of its elites, of its left opposition, which should have been at the foreground. I speak as a man of the left. I got my PhD in Berkeley in the 1960s. What I see, the left I see in Greece now is the left of the nomenclatura, not certainly the left I was proud to belong then. Yet all is not lost in spite of this. Greece did not go bankrupt, and some people saw the light and did the right thing after electoral posturing. Our current prime minister is a prime example. After campaigning against the policy he is now applying, there was progress in law reforms. Some reforms did take place. It's vital for the Hellenic diaspora to get involved. We know what a well-run state looks like. The Greeks don't.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our